听力课堂，听 class.com。
本剧品由中国人民大学出版社音像部制作出版发行，尊重知识产权，请勿泛用。
Unit 7. Entertainment and Pastimes. Section 1.
Part 1.
What's your idea of a perfect weekend?
To be in Idaho. If next weekend works out, it will be the perfect weekend. I will get up in the morning about 5:30. I will go outside and be there with the sunrise. That's when I work out. I love the morning.I'll either make breakfast for the kids, or we'll go to one of the great little places in town. I'll go skiing, hiking, just nothing. Or, a great weekend here in LA is to hang out at the house. Maybe go out to breakfast with the kids and go to a movie in the afternoon. And I'm in heaven, just to see a film and then make dinner in the evening. I really like a boring life.
If the walls in your bedroom had ears, what exactly would they hear you and Stephen say to each other first thing in the morning?
If he wakes up in the morning when I do and says something to me, the first thing I say to him is, "Shh, I don't want to talk. It's not that I'm not awake. I just need that quiet time."
What kind of car do you drive? Is it fancy?
I have a Bimmer, a BMW 735. Actually, I love that car. I really do. We have a Jeep and that. The Bimmer is a kind of family car because there are four doors. But it's a fancy car, and that's kind of not me. I'm more like a VW van.
Who do you think is the sexiest actor in movies today?
I've got to say...I just saw The Last of the Mohicans, and I thought Daniel Day-Lewis was pretty darn sexy. I saw him in a restaurant once, and I was astonished that he was so tall. I thought, I'll just go and say hi. But then I decided, since I wasn't wearing makeup, I'd just skip it.
How would you finish the statement? A woman can never be too rich, too thin, too...
healthy, or too in shape.
Section 2.
Part 1.
In June, the girls' summer holiday began. "We've worked hard for a long time," they said. "Now we're going to be lazy." "I'm going to get up late every day," said Meg. "I'm going to read and go out with Laurie," said Joe. "I'm going to draw and paint," said Amy.And I'm going to learn some new songs, said Beth. "Try it for a week," said their mother. "Perhaps you'll like it, and perhaps you won't. All play and no work is often as bad as all work and no play." "Oh no," said the girls. "We'll enjoy every minute." The next morning, Meg stayed in bed until 10 o'clock.And thought about new clothes. Then she went out and bought a dress. It was pretty, but it was the wrong size. Joe went out for a row on the river with Laurie, and the sun burned her nose. Beth left the dirty dishes in the kitchen and played the piano until her hands ached. Amy put her best white dress on and went into the garden to draw.She wanted someone to ask, "Who is that clever young artist?" But nobody came. It was a long day, the girls thought, and it was a long week. Meg tried to make her old dresses look new. Joe read until her eyes ached. Amy was soon tired of drawing. Beth sometimes forgot about all play and no work, and helped her mother and Hannah in the kitchen. On Saturday morning, when the girls came downstairs, breakfast was not ready. There was no fire in the kitchen, and their mother and Hannah were not anywhere. "What's happened?" asked Joe. Meg went upstairs and came back a few minutes later. "It's all right," she said. "Mother isn't ill, but she's given Hannah a holiday today, and now she's going to have a rest. Then she'll go out and let us look after ourselves." Meg cooked breakfast. It was not very nice. "I'll cook the lunch," said Joe. "You'll be the lady, Meg, and keep your hands clean." She looked in the cupboard for some food. "I want to cook something different for my first meal," she thought. So she went shopping. She met Laurie in the street and invited him to lunch. When she came home, Beth ran to her. She was crying. "Oh, Joe, my little bird. I forgot to give him food and water, and now he's dead." "Don't cry, Beth," said Joe. "We'll bury him in the garden this afternoon. Now I'm going to cook a really nice lunch." But nothing tasted right. The potatoes were hard, and the vegetables were burnt. Laurie talked and joked loudly, but nobody ate much. "Well," thought Joe, "the strawberries and cream will be nice." The strawberries looked pretty in their glass dishes. Joe put a lot of sugar on them and put a big jug of cream on the table. She did not take any. "Perhaps there won't be enough," she thought. She looked at Laurie. He was eating bravely. Amy took a big spoonful of strawberries. Then she put her hand over her mouth and ran out of the room. "What's the matter?" Joe asked. "You put salt on the strawberries instead of sugar," said Meg, "and the cream's sour." Laurie began to laugh. They all had bread and butter and jam, and in the afternoon they buried Beth's bird in the garden. In the evening, Mrs. March came home. "Well, girls," she said, "have you all had a happy week?" "No, Mother," they said. Mrs. March smiled. "Home isn't pleasant when we stop helping each other," she said. "Try to remember that and enjoy the rest of your holidays. Now you know that all play and no work is often as bad as all work and no play." "I'm going to learn to cook," said Joe, and everybody laughed. Section 3.
Part 1. The most pleasurable day I ever spent was the one right after Christmas, when I was trapped indoors by an ice storm in Iowa City, Iowa. My husband and two sons and I had come to visit friends for the holiday and were staying in a rental house that was temporarily between tenants. The house had some food, 4 mattresses, food heat, a television, and no phone. On the day of the ice storm, the streets was too slippery to go out. So we piled the mattresses in one room and passed the hours lounging around, watching TV and talking. I've never had such a deeply pleasurable feeling of being safe, cut off from the world, untroubled by the foolish ideas that I should be doing something worthwhile. All that day and night until the storm let up the next afternoon, I wanted to stay there, in that house, in that state of extreme bliss, forever. Moments of pleasure are perfectly simple and extremely complicated. We're never so absolutely there as when pleasure makes us happy. And yet, at the same time, we can be inspired to think about our whole lives. We decide that we must be living right to have been given such joy, and we can't help wishing greedily that every moment could be just like it. Pleasure can be calculated, prepared for in advance. We spent all day cooking a meal that turns out even better than we'd imagined. We look around the table in the glow of candlelight and discover that we love and admire our friends even more than we'd known. Pleasure can also be spontaneous, unexpected and startling. I remember the spring I moved to the country and for the first time saw the giant quince tree in the yard in full bloom. I recall how I felt on that warm May morning when I leaned into the quince and let the branches surround me so that the entire world seemed to be made of bright red flowers, and the only sound anywhere was the gentle buzzing of bees. My friend R says, "When it comes to pleasure, music and flowers never disappoint." And it's true that a favourite song or purple irises in a blue glass vase can give us a steady glow or a jolt of great pleasure. Bliss can be as instantaneous as a whiff of cinnamon toast, a glimpse of golden afternoon light filtering down through the trees. Or it can be sustained over a longer time, a refreshing swim, a walk through crunching autumn leaves, a visit to a favourite park or museum. Pleasure can be as exotic as a trip to a foreign country, or as familiar and domestic as coming inside on a cold day, or inhaling the scent, like talcum powder, of a baby's head. There is intellectual pleasure, reading a novel or a poem, and pure sensual pleasure, a long hot bath, good food, all the kind that combines the physical and the cerebral, sinking down in our seats and digging into a box of buttery popcorn as we get ready to watch what we know will be a first-rate movie. One strange thing about pleasure is, you don't even have to be conscious. Few things are as sweet as a stolen, much-needed afternoon nap.
Unit 8. Medicine and Health. Section 1.
Part 1. What is Rogaine?
Rogaine Topical Solution is a prescription medicine for use on the scalp that is used to treat a type of hair loss in men and women, especially hair loss of the top or crown of the head in men, and diffuse hair loss or thinning of the front and top of the scalp in women.
How effective is Rogaine?
In men, clinical studies with Rogaine of over 2,300 men with male pattern baldness involving the top of the head were conducted by physicians in 27 US medical centres based on patient evaluations of regrowth at the end of 4 months. 26% of the patients using Rogaine had moderate to dense hair regrowth, compared with 11% who used a placebo treatment. No regrowth was reported by 41% of those using Rogaine and 58% of those using a placebo. By the end of 1 year, 48% of those who continued to use Rogaine rated their hair growth as moderate or better. In women, clinical studies with Rogaine were conducted by physicians in 11 US and 10 European medical centres, involving over 600 women with hair loss, based on patient evaluations of regrowth after 32 weeks. 23% of the women using Rogaine had at least moderate regrowth, compared with 9% of those using a placebo. No regrowth was reported by 43% of the group using Rogaine and 60% of the group using placebo.
How soon can I expect results from using Rogaine?
Studies show that the response time to Rogaine may differ greatly from one person to another. Some people using Rogaine may see results faster than others. Others may respond with a slower rate of hair regrowth. You should not expect visible regrowth in less than 4 months.
How long do I need to use Regain?
Regain is a hair loss treatment, not a cure. If you have new hair growth, you will need to continue using Regain to keep or increase hair regrowth. If you do not begin to show new hair growth with Regain after a reasonable period of time, at least 4 months, your doctor may advise you to discontinue using it.
What happens if I stop using Regain? Will I keep the new hair?
Probably not. People have reported that new hair growth was shed after they stopped using Regain.
Can people with high blood pressure use Regain?
Most people with high blood pressure, including those taking high blood pressure medicine, can use Regain, but should be monitored closely by their doctor.
Are there special precautions for women?
Pregnant women and nursing mothers should not use Regain. Also, its effects on women during labour and delivery are not known.
Can Regain be used by children?
No, the safety and effectiveness of Regain has not been tested in people under the age of 18. Section 2.
Part 1. Colds and flu are contracted by breathing viral-laden droplets that have been sneezed or coughed into the air, something that's all the more likely to happen when frosty weather forces us to congregate indoors. Viruses can also be rubbed into the eyes or nose after touching contaminated objects, Aunt Sally's wineglass, or people, Aunt Sally herself. You're especially apt to succumb to in December. Dry winter air dehydrates mucous membranes in the nose, making them more susceptible to viral invaders. The best defence is what your mother always told you. Eat well and get plenty of rest. Studies have confirmed that both bolster the immune system, making you less vulnerable to infection, says P. John Seward, MD, trustee of the American Medical Association, and a family physician in Rockford, Illinois. Keeping well hydrated, drinking at least 6 to 8 glasses of liquid a day, or using a humidifier, make sure it's well cleaned, also helps prevent the lining of the nose from getting parched. And frequent hand washing keeps infection at bay. As for vitamin C, there's no hard evidence that it protects against colds and flu, though some people, including researchers, say that at least it eases symptoms. If you do get sick, getting plenty of sleep and liquids will speed recovery. Over-the-counter medications relieve symptoms marginally, but see a doctor if you're sick longer than 7 days. You may have developed a secondary bacterial infection in, say, your sinuses or chest, which requires antibiotics, says George Strelioff, MD, a family physician at University Hospital of Cleveland.
Section 3.
Part 1.
What with gift shopping, entertaining, travelling, and more, something's got to give. And sleep, it seems, is often it. To beat burnout. Exercise regularly. It may seem like one more thing to cram into your crazy schedule, but working out is worth the effort. People who exercise have more energy, says Steve Riddle, MS, Director of Fitness Services for University Hospital of Cleveland. Regular workouts rev you up by helping your body run more efficiently. Circulation improves, and muscles do a better job of converting fat and carbohydrates into energy. Eat for energy. After a meal, blood rushes to the stomach to assist with digestion, limiting the amount of blood and oxygen available to your brain and muscles, explains Robin Flips, RD, a consulting nutritionist in Ocean, New Jersey. And the more fat you consume, the longer post-meal drowsiness lasts. You may also want to limit the mashed potatoes and stuffing, because carbohydrates prompt the release of serotonin, a brain chemical that induces drowsiness. Choose instead protein-rich fare, such as a turkey sandwich, chef salad, or chicken soup. And if you do need a pick-me-up, a recent study has shown that coffee in moderation, no more than 3 cups a day, has no adverse health effects. Try not to skimp on sleep. It might mean buying cookies for the office bash instead of baking them, but the gain will be in the energy you'll have for more important things. Keep stress under control. The physiological charges set off by stress, heart rate races, muscles tense, blood pressure spikes, can drain your body of much needed energy, says Georgia Whitkin, PhD, author of The Female Stress Syndrome, and director of the stress program at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City. And mental overload can fatigue you as much as physical strain. So experiment with a few stress-controlling strategies. Deep breathing, counting backwards from 10, plunging into soothing music, until you find one that works for you. It'll give you the stamina you need to get through the holidays and the new year. Unit 9. Finance and Economy. Section 1.
Part 1.
What is inflation?
Inflation means rising prices. Too much money chasing too few goods. Economic growth usually brings moderate inflation. And that's what we've gotten used to in the past 15 years. What's disastrous is when inflation gets out of hand, think Germany in 1922-23, when inflation averaged 322% per month and cash lost its value so rapidly that people became desperate to swap it for goods.
What is deflation?
Deflation means falling prices. Sounds like a good thing? Wrong. It amounts to too many goods chasing too few buyers. As a result, businesses will earn less because they can't charge as much for their goods. And faced with the choice between cutting prices and lowering output, some will choose the latter, which usually means people lose their jobs. Deflation is also bad news for people with debt because the money they pay back has more purchasing power than the money they borrowed.
Then what is disinflation?
Disinflation means prices are rising, but not quite as fast as they were. Disinflation, while benign, can spiral into deflation. This is how it all happens. Step 1. Global competition. Cheaper imports, oversupply, or weaker demand keep US firms from increasing profits by raising prices. Step 2. Companies focus on cost-cutting and boosting productivity. Wages are held in check or tied to profits. In extreme cases, companies shut down plants and lay off workers. Step 3. Consumers husband their slower-growing income and reduce debt. Depending on confidence levels and job stability, they may begin to hold off purchases in expectation of even lower prices later. Step 4. Subdued demand in turn forces prices even lower, squeezing profits further. The economy slows, and the cycle begins anew.